Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record for Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. We begin our reading today with an article entitled, Ford County Gives Primary Election Results. Ford County has released the primary election results from Tuesday evening. There were three contested races and one question on the ballot. Two county board districts were contested on the Republican ticket. With the retirement of current Circuit Clerk Kim Evans, Kay Johnson Anderson received more votes than Susie Schell to take Evans' place. In District 2, Tim Nuss and Leslie King received more votes than Robert Lundgren. Lundgren, who is the current county board chairman and a long-serving board member, said he hopes the county board will find ways to raise revenues and find cuts in the budget without cutting the county too deep. "You can only do deficit spending for so long," he said. In District 3, the top vote-getters were, in order, Randy Ferguson, Bernadette Ray, and Jerry Wright, with Emily Latz finishing the list. As for the question on the ballot, voters were in favor of the levy of a tax not to exceed 0.20% to control, maintain, and purchase land and construction of necessary buildings for cemeteries to create a Mona Township Cemetery Fund. Mona Township Supervisor Howard Haley said if this had not passed, then the Kempton Hill Cemetery could have ended up abandoned because it's in such disrepair. He said the township has the Mona Township Cemetery and it uses money from the general fund. Now, with it taking ownership of the Kempton Cemetery, we would need to levy a tax to spend on both of them. County Clerk Amy Frederick said voter turnout was really good with all that was going on, especially health-wise. Really good. There were no problems at the 22 precincts, and votes were tallied by about 9:30 p.m. With 30.9% voter turnout, 2,680 of 8,760 registered voters, the results are as follows. On the Republican ticket, for President Donald J. Trump, for U.S. Senator Mark C. Curran, or Curran, for District 15 Representative in Congress, Mary Miller. For the District 16th Representative to Congress, Adam Kinzinger. State Legislative District 106, Thomas M. Bennett. For Circuit Clerk, Kay Johnson Anderson. Coroner, Brandon Roderick. State's Attorney, Andrew J. Killian. County Board District Number 1, Jason Johnson. County Board District Number 2, Tim Nuss and Leslie King. County Board District Number 3, Randy Ferguson and Bernadette Ray. For the 11th Circuit Court, Jason Chambers. For the Brenton Committee Person, Jeffrey C. Orr. For Drummer 1 Committee Person, Dennis Fisher. Drummer 5 Committee Person, Thomas M. Bennett. Lyman Committee Person, Tim Nuss. Mona Committee Person, Theodore W. Conklin. Patton 1 Committee Person, Steve Pacey. Patton 3 Committee Person, Michael L. Crumwetty. Patton 4 Committee Person, Kim Evans. Peach Orchard Committee Person, Eric R. Thompson. And Pella Committee Person, Leslie King. On the Democratic ballot, for President, Joseph R. Biden. For U.S. Senator, Richard J. Durbin. For the District 15 Representative in Congress, Erica C. Weaver. For the District 16 Representative in Congress, Danny Brzozowski. And the last item on the ballot was the Mona Township Cemetery, which, as we've already said, passed. On the front page of the Ford County Record, Paxton City Council has March meeting. The sale of the city's airport to a North Carolina man who intends to use it for his crop dusting business is final. David Rupsa of Roper, North Carolina, who owns Atlantic Ag Aviation Incorporated, signed the contract Friday. He paid $100,000 in cash and is securing a note for the remaining $50,000. Under the terms of the contract, Rupsa is required to operate the property as a public airport according to the applicable Federal Aviation Administration regulations for the next 30 years. Also, RUPSA must continue to honor leases held by pilots using the airport's hangars. One of the last things the city had to do was make sure the city's old landfill adjacent to the airport was not an obstacle to the sale. This past September, the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency sent a letter to Mayor Bill Ingold indicating that it had determined that the post-closure sale of the landfill had been sufficiently completed, paving the way for the city to sell the landfill proper to someone where their interest in doing that. Currently, there is not. Alderman Cammy Johnson Anderson raised concerns that the city might have liability exposure should RUPSA decide to use the site for skydiving before he'd paid off the note. Ingold said there was little likelihood of that, and City Attorney Mark Miller said the deed is transferred at the time of sale and the city is no longer the owner, the note paying the same role as a homeowner mortgage. Also, the contract says the city will have the right of first refusal should RUPSA decide to sell at any time, and that he must maintain a courtesy car at the site. If and when RUPSA repairs the runway and installs a credit card self-service fuel pump, portions of the note will be forgiven, funded by tax increment finance district money. Also, resident Mark Dyer told the City Council he is interested in purchasing a house the city bought last year in the 300 block of West Franklin. Dwyer said he believes the house has renovation potential and he thought the city would welcome returning the property to the tax roll. Dwyer said he's moved to Paxton recently and that he and his son want to fix up houses and sell them. He asked about another vacant property, but Miller said that one has a very complicated deed. Also, city employee Bob Carlton told the alderman that when residents complain to them about malfunctioning water meters, residents should be told to call City Hall. Carlton said that way appointments can be set up with them to install replacements. When questioned as to the extent of the problem, too many have malfunctioned, Carlton said. Ingle said the batteries went down prematurely on the remote read meters, but they should be under warranty. Also, the board adjourned the meeting to March 24th at 7 p.m. to discuss street projects to be paid with motor fuel tax money. Anderson Johnson said daycare employees are pleased with the effect on traffic the two-way stop signs posted in the neighborhood have had, and Ingold said he has contacted two concrete contractors about possibly doing sidewalk work for the city. Ingold also said he was contacted by the IEPA about Paxton Landfill No. 1, closed since 1976, upon which the city brush pile sits. Ingold walked the site with a state inspector who found no problems that would adversely affect the Mahomet Aquifer. Also on the front page, Ludlow Village Attorney recommends redrafting Village Water Rate Ordinance. Ludlow. The Village Board approved a redrafted ordinance of the water rates, altering an ordinance that had been drafted last June. Village Attorney Mark Miller told the board at a special meeting that the previous ordinance had not been prepared by his office and was not done properly. He said the motion recorded in the June minutes was vague. He said the trustees should affirm their intention to raise the rates and to approve a revised ordinance. The board then voted to approve the amended ordinance. The adjusted rates were required to accommodate receiving grant money to help pay for the water's main replacement project. Mayor Steve Thomas said the water rate increases were passed to adjust our cash flow to be able to make payments back to the USDA on the portion that we are borrowing from them. Before they give you the money, you have to prove that you are able to pay the money back. The rates are now more in line with other self-sustained water systems in the county. Ludlow qualified for a 60% $2.8 million grant to replace the water mains installed in 1948 and the water plant. The village will have to pay about $1,120,000 of the total. Trustees also discussed several nuisance issues, and Police Chief Joe Navarro asked Miller for guidance on how to handle the issues. Miller said he would send sample policies to Navarro. Miller also discussed the legal process involved with various nuisance and ordinance violations. The board also updated Miller on the status of updating the village ordinance book. He said the up-to-date ordinance make it easier to make necessary legal action. The board discussed legalization of recreational cannabis and ordinances pertaining to it. The board also asked what dollar amount the village is required to let bid for projects. Miller said it is $25,000. From the Iroquois County Board, County Board to look for ECICAA representative. Iroquois County needs a representative on the East Central Illinois Community Action Agency Board. John Edwards, Interim Executive Director of the ECICAA, spoke at Tuesday's Iroquois County Board meeting. The ECICAA office is located in Danville. He said he wrote a letter to County Board Chairman John Shore asking for a representative to fill a seat on the ECICAA's board. He asked for someone from the county board, or from the county staff, or from someone the county board recommends to represent Iroquois County's interests on our Community Action Agency Board of Directors. He said it's part of federal law as part of the Community Services Block Grant that the Board of Directors has at least one-third of its membership be local elected officials currently holding office. The Board of Directors is a 15-member board. Four of the five slots are filled with elected officials. The last Iroquois County elected official on the board was Bob Harwood, who resigned in May of 2019. The only request we're making is that you appoint someone from this board to serve on our board of directors to represent the interests of Iroquois County. Shore said this would be done at the April meeting. As for business to come before the board approved each committee's report 17-0, with Kevin Bowman, Kevin Kronhauer, and Jed Winslow absent from the meeting. As part of the tax committee report, Treasurer Kurt Albers added a resolution for the full board to approve. It was to assign a tax sale certificate number 2018-184 to Julie Pranger in the amount of $1,279.29. He said this says that the property she bought through the county's trustee, all taxes are paid up to date on the property. This was approved by the board. Shore reminded all there would be another town hall meeting to explain the proposed River Conservancy District March 12th at the Trinity Church in Watseka. Now, a sports story of interest. PBL, one of four to apply for Illini Prairie Conference. Paxton. It wouldn't have been the least bit unusual earlier this century to see Paxton Buckley Lota's athletic teams squaring off against those of St. Joseph Ogden and St. Thomas More. It still isn't in the present. There just aren't conference records at state, like in the past. That could soon change. PBL Athletic Director Brock Niebuhr confirmed Friday that his school placed an all-sports bid to join the Illini Prairie Conference. Friday was the deadline to submit such applications. Officials of the 10-team league that includes Monticello, Prairie Central, Rantoul, St. Joseph Ogden, St. Thomas More, and Unity publicly posted in February that the IPC was seeking a football-only member while also keeping the door open to adding an all-sports member. This was in response to STM in January leaving IHSA 11-man football to join the Illini 8-man football association, although the Sabres will remain in the IPC in all other sports. Prairie Central principal Brad Allen, the IPC's president, told the News Gazette on Friday that four applications had been received from schools wanting to join the IPC. He added that he couldn't share any specifics on the identity of those schools. At this time, the IPC principals have determined the top priority is to replace St. Thomas More on the football schedule, which will allow us to have 10 football members and 11 total conference members, Allen wrote in an email. We will be sharing all letters of interest within the Illini Prairie Conference on March 16th. Principals will vote on March 23rd. PBL has been in the Sangamon Valley Conference since 1990, formerly with rivals such as SJO and STM. The league currently consists of seven all-sports team schools and Seneca in a football capacity, and PBL has the largest IHSA-listed enrollment of the seven all-sports members at 472. None of the other six possess an enrollment larger than 344. This, Niebuhr said, was the impetus behind PBL looking for a change. We're playing a lot of 1A schools within our conference, and we're clearly and solidly 2A, said Niebuhr, who also noted PBL was a 3A football program in 2019. At this point, it seems like a good fit with the IPC. We have a lot of confidence that we're going to be able to go in the Illini Prairie and compete. PBL would rank 8th in this year's IPC by enrollment, ahead of St. Joseph Ogden with 467, Bloomington Central Catholic with 324, and St. Thomas More at 281. The seven larger schools hold an IHSA enrollment between 511 and 763. Niebuhr said PBL would not apply for a spot in the IPC if it was a football-only position, adding that the school wasn't actively seeking to change leagues before STM's eight-man football announcement. That was kind of a situation that evolved really quickly, Niebuhr said. PBL, as an SVC member, is accustomed to facing IPC schools in several sports. During the 2019 volleyball regular season, for example, the Panthers matched up with Monticello, Prairie Central, Rantoul, St. Joseph Ogden, St. Thomas More, and Unity. Niebuhr also described any changes in travel time and distance as almost going to be a wash. I don't want to discredit the history of PBL in the Sangamon Valley, Niebuhr said. Obviously, we'll do everything we can to keep the rivalries and things going with those schools. There's absolutely no hard feelings with anything going on in the Sangamon Valley. We think the time is right to make the switch. And in a piece of positive news, PBL students raised $32,000 in Kids Heart Challenge. PBL Clara Peterson students participated in Kids Heart Challenge during the month of February. This program is sponsored by the American Heart Association. Students are encouraged to participate in sport heart-healthy activities throughout the month, seek donations from family and friends, and then attend Heart Healthy Night at Clara Peterson. Clara Peterson's goal for the fundraiser was $25,000. The students worked hard all month, and physical education teachers Jake LeClaire and Amy Swan helped by contacting local businesses. The students raised $32,000. The businesses that contributed to the success were the Frederick Community Bank, the Gibson Area Hospital, Farmers Merchants Bank, Ford Bear Funeral Services, Coldwell Banker Real Estate, Federated Bank, Paxton IGA, Cox Knapp Funeral Home, Buckley State Bank, Colmac Coil Plastic Designs Incorporated, Conexus Paxton Monocles, Shields Automart, Rantoul, Walmart, Paxton Hardware and Rental, Premier Construction, Vermilion Valley Bank, and Martinson, Neiman and Sorensen Law Offices. Students received thank you gifts from the American Heart Association depending on their donation amount. Brooke Mullins and Kennedy Wift of Coldwell Banker Real Estate sponsored a bounce house from Paxton Hardware and Rental for the entire school to celebrate the success. The top two fundraising students, Keegan Hansen and Bradley LeClaire, got to throw a pie in Barry Wright and Amanda Stikes' face during the Heart Healthy Assembly. Many students also received prizes during the assembly, including ear pods, kickballs, jump ropes, t-shirts, giant footballs, and more. The top fundraising class from each grade level received a pizza party from Monocle's Pizza. In addition to these amazing thank you gifts, American Heart Association has given Clara Peterson gift certificates to use towards PE equipment that will be utilized by the entire school. To culminate Heart Healthy Month, they had a Heart Healthy Night that included various activities in the Commons and Gym of Clara Peterson. Activities during the evening included Choose My Plate with fourth grade teacher Tyler Bauer and second grade teacher Jill Steiner. Heart Healthy Craft Activities with kindergarten teachers Laura Peden and Anna Talbert, Paxton Elite Fitness Chris Johnson, Lindsay Frischel, and Steve Sample, Blood Pressure Checks by Michelle Cosgrove, Snacks Provided by Pit Crew, and Activities in the Gym with High School Students. Heart Healthy Night was attended by more than 500 students and their parents. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Wednesday, March 18, 2020. Velma Louise List Craig. Velma Louise List Craig, age 90, of Elliott, Illinois, died on Friday, March 13, 2020, at Cedarhurst of Collinsville, Illinois. Funeral services were held Wednesday, March 18th, officiated by Louise's great-grandniece, Allison Hitchings, of Clinton, Illinois. Burial will be at Riverside Cemetery in Saybrook, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to the Hospice of Southern Illinois. Carolyn Daniels Carter. Carolyn Daniels Carter, 85, of Paxton, passed away at 10:40 p.m. Sunday, March 8, 2020, at her home. Funeral services were held Saturday, March 14th, at Full Gospel Christian Fellowship in Paxton, with the pastor Terry Cooper officiating. Burial followed in Ridgeland Township Cemetery in Thawville. Memorials may be made to Hooves of Hope in Potomac or an organization of the donor's choice. Robert H. Bob Nielsen. Robert H. Bob Nielsen, 78, of Paxton, died at 6:45 p.m. Tuesday, March 10, 2020, at his home. A memorial service was held Saturday, March 14th at the Christian Bible Church on Cisna Park, with the Reverend John Benner officiating. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Laura Lynn Brooks. Laura Lynn Brooks, 61, of Danforth, passed away at 5:24 p.m. Monday, March 9th, 2020, at her home. There will be no services at this time. Memorials may be made to the family. We return to the news with a story entitled, County Offices to Remain Open Until Further Notice. To alleviate confusion and give accurate information to the citizens of Ford County and the public generally, the recent order limiting court business in the 11th Judicial Circuit has no effect on the other county offices located within the courthouse, according to the news release. The Ford County Clerk and Recorder, Treasurer, Supervisor of Assessments, and Sheriff's Office will continue to be open 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, except for holidays, until further notice. However, much of the business conducted on a day-to-day basis in those offices can be conducted over the phone or using email communication. For that reason, the public is asked to avoid unnecessary trips to the courthouse and call or email ahead to determine if the matter can be addressed without an in-person conference. Phone numbers and email addresses are available under the Offices tab on the Ford County website at www.fordcounty.illinois.gov. Next, we'll turn to a guest column by Jim Nowlin. Tale of Two Families Explains Pulling Apart. At a recent dinner party, I was wondering why our society appears to be pulling apart. I observed that sometimes unfortunate consequences flow down from otherwise benign changes. I illustrated with a tale of two families, both known to me in my rural central Illinois setting. When I was a boy, post-World War II, small towns and cities, not too different from mine, tended to have more diverse and balanced economic mix than today, or so I aver. There would be a small manufacturer or two, generally family-owned, a banker or two, several doctors, a number of independent Main Street businesses, factory workers, schools, janitors, and farmers. The leading families did indeed, in my town at least, live on a hill, and there were the right and wrong sides of the railroad track. Yet, the banker's children went to the same local public school along with the janitor's kids. Sometimes, their kids even married. Most families, certainly the factory workers who often carpooled to one of the cat plants in Peoria, considered themselves properly middle class. That brings me to the two families I used to illustrate how we have tended to pull apart in socio-economic terms since then. The simple table accompanying this writing shows how two rather typical families on the same tree-lined block back then have seen their grandchildren pulled far apart in income and residential location. In 1970, Ron Anderson worked at CAT, earning about $50,000 in today's dollars. His wife Nancy was a stay-at-home mom, as were most. Down at the end of the block, general practitioner Jim Smith earned, say, $150,000. Wife Susan, an RN, stayed home with their young children. The ratio of the doc's income to that of the factory worker was about 3-1. Both were solidly middle class. Half a century later, their grandchildren are markedly different situations. Grandson Ron Anderson works at a hog slaughtering plant. The granddad's good job at CAT is no longer existing, earning about $25,000 a year. Wife Marlee works out of necessity at Walmart, almost full-time, for about $15,000, thus a total of $40,000 a year. Dr. Jim Smith III is a specialist, earning about $250,000 a year. His wife Betsy, also an MD, also earns $250,000 or more. They live in a gated community in suburban Chicago near a medical center. Their total income of $500,000 is at least 12 times that of the Ron Anderson family. In 1970, there were few single-parent families in Illinois. Today, there are many single-parent households in small-town America. The mom's education often stopped at high school by the demands of parenting. These often stressed-out mothers earn maybe $15,000 in minimum wage jobs or from welfare. Their income is about 1/33 or less of the Smiths. The single moms, there's a tiny number of single dad households, parenting skills are limited at best, though there are exceptions, as always. Over these about two generations, family situations have, in many cases like these, pulled far apart for three simple and otherwise benign reasons. Women work today and at any position to which they aspire. And third, like kinds marry. If there is anything that I observe to what I observe here, and you can look around to see if I am right or not, what to do? I'm not a parent, so I am the last person who should be giving advice. Yet that has never stopped me before. First, much more attention should be given by community organizations and schools to coaching young parents, especially those with limited positive support systems, about how to nurture and support the educational aspirations of their children. This coaching should encourage the setting of high expectations for educational achievement and career success. Chinese families probably go overboard in this regard, yet it apparently helps generate high-achieving outcomes. Second, since teen birth rates are down dramatically in the past 20 years, we should learn more about why this has occurred and do all we can to encourage the trend line down even further. Third, traditional marriage rates are down among young people. We need to understand better the consequences of this, both bad and maybe good, and of what society might do to nudge young people to develop positive game plans for any parenting that is in their future. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Record. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings are available on our website. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again real soon.